It's probably lower for oldsters, especially if you have some sort of brain syndrome that's pointing toward a stroke. Will you do it? Pear asked. No, she said. I would if I were first generation, but I'm third. I will, Edison said, as soon as I have everything straightened out here. We'll be at Beta by then, Giles Clifford said. Edison smiled. Not quite, Giles. My second-in-command, Lynn Meadows, would rather not just step into the job. She wants a general election, which I'd like to make a vote of confidence. She's every bit as capable as I am, and second generation, which is quite a selling point right now.
Nepenthe. Why hadn't I thought of it? I suddenly realized it was a symptom of denial. I wasn't really going to die, so I didn't think very hard about trying to avoid it.
Looking down the row of leaders, you could pick out the first-generation ones by their expressions. Contemplation. Fear. Logically, it wasn't a difficult decision, a 20% chance of death versus 100% eventually. But how do you calculate the probability that they might find out what was wrong and cure it before your number came up? And it would be an interesting time to be alive. Most of the others were probably making a similar fuzzy calculation. Dworkin was explaining about Nepenthe.
Developed before the war. It puts a patient into suspended animation until a cure can be found. The longest anyone ever used it was 40-some years, but it should probably work for centuries.
But someone has to stay awake to administer the antidote, Pear said. If it turns out that we all have to take it...
Not really. A machine like Cronkite could do it. But we do have a lot of extra doses. People could take turns staying awake for a few years at a time. That's the theoretical model. Always have some human presence aboard.
What does it feel like? Edison said. Sleeping?
She nodded. Dreamless sleep. Or if people have dreams, they don't remember them, which makes sense because there's no REM, rapid eye movement. There's no movement at all. You go through a purging exactly like one does before entering virtuality, then take eye drops and an injection. You have about 20 minutes before you lose consciousness completely. On Earth, you have to be turned regularly to prevent bed sores, bone chafes. Here, we can just park you in zero gravity. Over a day or so, a thin, waxy film appears on your skin, which allows the body to retain moisture. Your heart slows and stops while your blood and other fluids thicken. In essence, you're temporarily embalmed. Recovery begins with an injection in or near the heart. It's slow and unpredictable, because at first the chemical can only spread through diffusion, not circulation. When the heart starts pumping blood into the brain, you slowly regain consciousness. You awaken with the king of all hangovers.
20% don't, Edison said.
At least. But looking at the trend on Earth, if I were an oldster, I'd be in line for Nepenthe right now. If they find a cure and deaths suddenly stop and I'm given the Nepenthe antidote within a month or a year, I suspect the recovery rate would be much better than 80%.
Speaking of statistics, Edison said, with only 3 dead, we're 5 behind Earth. An optimist would say conditions aboard give us a lower death rate. We pessimists just look at the behavior of large and small numbers.
And get in line as quickly as possible, Pear said, and looked at Dworkin.
Do we have to go over to Sanitas for the treatment?
No, every ship has more than enough for the whole population. That was the original rationale for including it, if an emergency forced all 800 into one ship. 600 would have to be turned into inert cargo.
Edison wanted the individual leaders to give their immediate responses to the emergency. He called on me first, either because I was on the end or because he wanted to stir something up. Dworkin wouldn't like anything I said. Off the top of my head, until we know more about virtuality and the death rate on Earth, we ought to still consider tripping potentially life-threatening. That's mitigated in 2 directions, though. We do know that people on board can die in or out of the machine, so avoiding it is not going to save your life. Dworkin started to say something, but I rushed on. We also will have a new class of clients,
people who are planning to take Nepenthe and enter this odd state between life and death. If they want to trip one last time, visit their past or some time and place particularly meaningful to them, I think they should be given priority. Nonsense, Dvorkin cut in. The machine should be unplugged. We're facing a demographic... I have the floor, Doctor. You see it as recklessness, as you always have. I see it as charity. If 20% of those people are going to die, don't you think they deserve some consideration? Some latitude about how they spend their last days? I could tell by the other's expressions that I'd won that point, so I left it there and sat down. Dvorkin didn't pursue it, but spent her time talking about more purely medical aspects of the problem. The others mostly had variations on one theme. If every first-generation worker stepped out of the picture overnight, Aspera would be paralyzed. We needed a comprehensive replacement schedule, with the people who were easiest to replace going first. With a shock, I realized that included me. I could drop dead, and Bruce would pick up the reins without a single client being inconvenienced. I wasn't going to leave until I was sure there would still be clients, though. Dvorkin would love to have me out of the picture. She wasn't quite rational about tripping. As if I were. I tried not to leave with unseemly haste when the meeting wound down. Kate had said that when the broadcast ended, she would come down and be waiting in my bed for another iteration, then another in the morning before work. She'd given up a lot for that egg and wanted to be sure it would hatch. She might also be missing the peculiar pleasures of heterosex. She was certainly good at it. 22. Slide into Darkness. After Kate left in the morning, I napped for an hour or so, then thought half awake about the things I had to do and in what order. There were so many one-last-time things that I could spend a year without even going into the machine. I remembered a sepia photograph of Einstein playing his violin while guiding a small sailboat, his foot on the tiller, an abstracted, dreamy expression on his face. I wondered at the time whether he was thinking about one of his several women, or his first love, mathematical physics. Maybe he was deciding whether or not to have sauerkraut with lunch. He should have lived in this world, minus the trauma of getting here. Spend a lifetime with your violin, and another lifetime sailing, and 3 or 4 lifetimes, 10, deciphering the universe. It was hard to give up this life, even for those of us who have only habits and talents rather than genius. Never start another painting, another quartet, another round of handball or argument about history or pot of ropa vieja. Never taste Spanish food again, or French, or a woman, or wine. I slid open the drawer by my desk and took out the bottle of Mouton Rothschild 1945. I could open it tonight. Invite Bruce and Kate, Becca and Lowell, who else? Vivian and Edison? One last taste of old 20th, the only real taste in trillions of miles. No, I would save it. Aspera, after all. Hope. In 10 or 100 or 1,000 years, they would thaw us out. That would be the time to celebrate. Or wait for Beta. Though we might be there by then, after a millennium of sleep. I pressed my thumbprint onto the desk, and it chimed awake. I want to change my will, I said. Last will and testament. Go ahead. If I should die, I want the old bottle of wine. You know what I mean? Yes, the Mouton Rothschild. I want it to go to my child by Kate Larson. If he or she is not alive, then give it to the descendant closest to that line. If no one survives from that union, I had the creepy feeling that the machine had been watching our union, which of course it could, then that would be Kate's daughter Jen, currently living on Sanitas. Is that agreeable to you? Yes, though the definition of death is a factor. After you take Nepenthe, you'll stop breathing, and you will have no measurable brain activity. I had to pause at that. Are you fucking with me, machine? Not my job, Jacob. But on Earth, Before the war, it was tested in a Swiss court, and the man was declared legally dead. When he revived, he countersued his children, but they'd already spent most of it. Okay, as a codicil, add that for the purposes of this document, I will not be considered dead while under treatment with Nepenthe. Or any related drug. Done. End it. I wondered whether that command had any meaning anymore. I looked around the room. Guitar, walking stick, my father's painting of the main place, the VJ Day cover of Life. The guitar should be played. I'd leave it down in the music rooms and hope for the best. Everybody I played with knew how delicate and valuable it was. But what about the other stuff? I picked my pants up off the floor and fished the phone out of the pocket. Administration brought me a woman named Lou, L-U, or L-O-O, or maybe L-O-U. I asked her where people would be storing personal effects while they slept through this crisis. "I don't know, sir." I could hear her keyboard rattling, then silence. "Could you leave them with friends?" "Suppose I don't have any. None who aren't also asleep." "There's no policy, sir. I suppose you could leave them in your residence with a note." "Okay, thank you." Well, that gave me something to do. Make policy. Actually, there would be a surplus of rooms once all of us oldsters were sleeping it off up in Zero G. I could volunteer my room as a storage space and ask others to do the same. That would work until people got lonely and started having babies by the score. I called up the schedule and confirmed that there was a general administrative meeting over at ours tonight at 2000. I could go over early, try to relax with some drawing, have dinner at their mess, which tended to be more spicy than ours, if unimaginative. The light box was in the same drawer as the wine. Maybe I'd try the left-handed experiment again, if there was a model. I opened a new page and held the stylus in my left hand and block-printed things to do for the meeting. One was storage allocation. The next was raise hell with Dvorkin, but I erased that with a finger stroke. I'd probably remember. Tripping schedule starting when? I switched the stylus to my right hand and scribbled some notes. It depended on the Nepenthe schedule, which I was pretty sure Dvorkin would co-opt. "Shuttle schedule," I said to the wall. "Shuttle A would be here in 9 minutes. It had 5 vacancies, and there were 2 people waiting." I got dressed and went on up. Waiting in Zero G was usually pleasant. Now that I faced being stored here indefinitely, it had lost its charm. The other 2 people were reserved, lost in thought, perhaps for the same reason. The airlock chimed, and we entered the shuttle with our gecko slippers. Everybody was upside down, as usual. I saw an empty place and stood under it, took off the slippers, and jumped up with a perfect half roll. I put one of the slippers back on halfway, and the other when I was standing properly on the ceiling. Funny how the most ordinary things seem special when you're about to die, even if it's only provisional death. One of the people next to me recognized who I was and asked whether he could be squeezed into 1967 anytime soon. I pushed the corner of the light box that turned it into a transceiver and wrote down a couple of questions. I was able to tell him 14 November, if the machine was up and running. "They wouldn't dare shut it down," he said firmly. "It would be mutiny." I wished I could be as sure. 3 of us got off at ours and geckoed to the lift. I got off at the 3/4 G level and left my slippers in the box there, put my sandals back on. I always liked the contrast, visiting ours, though I was glad to live in Mech's relative coolness and dryness. Venice Beach versus Venice. At first, I didn't notice anything was wrong. I walked through a thicket of hydroponic olive trees. They'd actually lived for years in Tuscany before being orbited and transplanted. They weren't in bloom, but still had a whisper of the wonderful, characteristic odor. The Life Studio was just past the Grove. I walked in and was glad to see Sherry on the platform, one of my favorite models. She was muscular from running and weight training, and tall, and could hold awkward poses for a long time without a tremor. She was in a torsion pose, like a discus thrower, good dramatic lighting. I nodded.